Mark 14, 1-11. Now the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread were only 2 days away, and the chief priests and the teachers of law were looking for some sly way to arrest Jesus and kill him. But not during the feast, they said, or the people may riot. While he was in Bethany, reclining at the table in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume, made of pure nard. She broke the jar and poured the perfume on his head. Some of those present were saying indulgently to one another, "Why this waste of perfume? It could have been sold for more than a year's wages, and the money given to the poor." And they rebuked her harshly. "Leave her alone," Jesus said. "Why are you bothering her? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, and you can help them any time you want. But you will not always have me. She did what she could. She poured the perfume on my body beforehand to prepare me for burial. Truly I tell you, whenever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in her memory." Then Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, went to the chief priests to betray Jesus to them. They were delighted to hear this and promised to give him money, so he watched for an opportunity to hand him over.
Thank you, Josh, and thank you to Sharon and the musicians for leading us. And oh, we're moving. Let me tell you about something that happened about 8 or 10 years ago. I got invited to a dinner party in the village. Not a posh do, obviously, because people round here aren't well-heeled, but still a special occasion. There were quite a lot of guys invited, a lot of the local men, and even some from Jerusalem. And there was such a buzz about the house, it seemed the rest of the village had turned up to have a gawp. Well, let's face it, you can't keep something like that quiet. Not in a place the size of Bethany. It was all a bit of a rush. Not like when so-and-so's son is marrying what's-his-name's daughter, and there'll be months arguing over the plans, plenty of time to prepare. But I did hear that this one was organised in less than a week, because they didn't know for definite until a few days before that the guest of honour was going to be in town. And they wanted to put on a good spread for him. So once he arrived, it was all go to get everything ready. And in 4 days, they'd fixed a banquet, and a good one at that, in 4 days. I was chuffed to get invited. I mean, I'm not close family, and there was that special guest. I'd met him before when he came to town, and I liked him. I think pretty well everyone in the village did. And I thought to myself, it would be nice to have a chance to sit and ask him a few quiet questions and hear what he said, because he was worth listening to. Not that I got much chance. The place was packed. House, yard, even the street outside. I don't know where they found all those bowls. So there we all were. And only a couple of days off the festival. Passover. Unleavened bread. The big celebration. Remembering Moses and the Exodus. Long ago and far away, when we became a free people, away from Egypt and Pharaoh and slavery and all that, it's part of who we Jews are. Even now, with those Romans, may they rest in Gehenna, stomping round, charging us tax and poking their big long noses into sacred things. I'd best not say too much about them, though. But Passover brings pilgrims. Good Jews come to Jerusalem 3 times a year, like Moses told us. Booths, first fruits, and Passover. They come in their thousands from all over the world, wherever Jews live. Everyone wants to be in the holy city for the festival. And out here in Bethany, well, if you're so much of a friend of someone's second cousin's next door neighbour's auntie, they count that as family. And suddenly you've got a house full of pious Passover visitors. I mean, 1 year we had to kill 3 lambs just to feed everyone. Our yard was like a campsite. But this year, the year I'm telling you about, there was a bit of a fizz in the air, like something big now might happen. Now, if you'd asked me, I wouldn't have had a clue. But if you'd pushed me into a corner, I might have guessed something to do with this special visitor. So maybe that's another reason I was glad to be going to this party. Something might kick off there. And people did say that man, Yeshua his name was, they did say he was God's chosen one, the Messiah. At least some of the dreamers said it. Launch a revolt in Bethany? I heard it rumoured. I didn't think so, not really, but you never know. There was definitely tension in the air, some kind of crisis brewing, and we felt it. But I've not told you where this dinner party was, have I? Now there's a thing. It was at Simon's house. Just an ordinary place, because Simon and his family, well, they're even poorer than most. He was known as Simon the Leper, which ain't a nice nickname, but then he did have leprosy, or at least he had had it. And you know as well as I do what goes on if there's even a hint of leprosy. That spot that won't go, that blotchy skin, those numb hands and feet. It's a bad business. And once there's a whisper of it, that's the end. They have to leave home, live outside the village with no company except the other sufferers. It scares me silly, I can tell you, and I reckon most of us feel the same. Get a few cases of that somewhere and no one will go near. So then poor wretches are on the scrap heap. Can't work, can't live at home, can't watch their kids grow up. No wonder Simon's family was poor. No one earning, so his wife and kids were only just scraping by. But Simon got a break. Somehow he got healed by this man Yeshua, the preacher from up north, from Galilee. He was quite a guy. I mean, who can heal a leper? But Simon got cured. He did what Moses had said, went to the priests and had them look at him all over, and they had to admit it was true. The leprosy was gone. Skin clean as a whistle. Never seen anything like it, they hadn't. But Simon could go back home. I guess all that was about a year earlier. So you can see why Simon and his family wanted to put on a big do when Yeshua of Nazareth was back in town. And if he hadn't been well again, I'd never have gone for dinner at his house. But he was. So I did. But Simon's family weren't the only ones wanting to honour this Yeshua. Take Lazarus. Never very strong, always a bit the invalid. And he still lived in the house where he grew up. Him and his two sisters, Martha and Mariam. None of them ever married. I could tell why with Martha. A right cantankerous so-and-so if she don't get her way. But Mariam's different. Gentler. And a head full of dreams. A pleasant girl, but not always practical. So there's Mariam and Martha, chalk and cheese, and Lazarus. And once Lazarus really did get ill, it was a horrible fever and no one else in the village had as much as a sniffle. But poor old Lazarus, he took to his bed and in less than a week, he was at death's door. Now Yeshua was their friend and he'd stay at their house when he came to Jerusalem, with Bethany being nearby. So the sisters got a few of the village lads to go all over looking for him. They found him, but it was too late. By the time Yeshua got here, the funeral was over. Only it wasn't too late. That's the thing. Yeshua talked to Martha, then to Mariam down at the tombs. And I swear it's the truth. Yeshua shouted to Lazarus to come out of the tomb, and he did. Looked right scary, the people said, who saw it, till they got the grave clothes off him. And there he was, blinking in the sunlight and alive as life can be, and his sisters grinning and dancing and weeping all at the same time. Come to think of it, I reckon one of them fainted from the shock. So that was another thankful family. Well then, dinner at Simon's house, all us guys with Simon, Lazarus and half the village and more from round about. Martha and the other women were serving, but I'd not seen Mariam anywhere. I was just thinking, It's not like her to hide away when Yeshua's around. She adored that man, said he made her feel good, said he respected people, didn't leave them pigeonholed where other folks pushed them. They do say that one time Mariam even joined the menfolk, sitting in on Rabbi Yeshua's teaching. Not what lasses usually do, and Martha was none too happy about it, believe me. But there was Mariam, drinking it all in, listening to Yeshua, and he let her stay there. Astonishing. But that night, nowhere in sight. Then, partway through the meal, who do you think came in, pushing her way through to the middle? Mariam, carrying a delicate bottle, the type that gets passed down the generations, full of exquisite perfume and worth a small fortune, I've no doubt. That would have been the most valuable thing in their house by far. I reckon Mariam inherited that when their mother died. And chances are she'd inherited it from her mother, and maybe even hers. A real family heirloom. But Mariam came right up where Yeshua was by Simon and Lazarus, and she broke the top off that bottle. Carefully, deliberately. Then she poured all that perfume over him, right over his head. Man, you've never known a room go quiet so quickly. Everybody could smell it and everybody turned to see what was going on. And there's Yeshua with pure nard running down his hair, his beard, his robe, even his feet. And Mariam in tears, clutching this broken bottle, kneeling down in front of him. What a moment. What a moment. And then someone starts grumbling. I mean, can you believe it? A moment like that, a gift like that, so generous. And some know-it-all spoils it, says she should have sold the perfume and given the money away, helped the poor. I mean, in some ways I can sympathise. It's a fair point. That perfume would have cost a workman a year's wages. It seems a waste if you look at it like that. Pure extravagance. There's so many beggars around here with nothing and widows scraping by on a pittance. Why not help them? But it's a bit churlish to say it in public right there when that's just happened. I mean, how do you think Mariam felt then after her big gesture? That was all the wealth she ever had and ever would have. All given away at once. Must have broken her heart to think she'd got it wrong. How do you get over that kind of letdown? I didn't recognise the grumbler's voice. Not someone local. But what I heard pretty soon afterwards, and this may surprise you, I don't know. What I heard was that it was one of Yeshua's guys, one of his followers. Oh, there were always people crowding round him, but there was a kind of inner group, I don't know, maybe a dozen or even 20 of them, who travelled with him all over the place. And someone said it was one of that lot told Mariam she'd got it wrong. I mean, is that how Yeshua wanted his followers to behave? Or was it that Yeshua wanted to stay as the gentle, loving teacher, all meek and mild-like? So he got one of his followers to say it instead? Well, not from what happened next. Yeshua, meek and mild? Not a bit of it. He was angry. Now, I don't know about you, but I reckon that would have made me angry. I mean, there he is, having dinner, and suddenly is dripping in perfume. How would you feel? I'd have been like, what do you think you're doing? This is my best robe. It'll never wash out. My hair's going to stink for weeks. I'll have to cut my beard short or I'll be a walking perfumery. What's got into you? Well, he was angry, but not with Mariam. He turned on the grumblers. There were a few of them by then, putting her down and told them to shut up. Said they could help the poor whenever they wanted. Ha, as if they really did want to most of the time. He said what she'd done was special, a one-off for him, and it would never be forgotten. He told them that all round the world, I mean, can you believe it? People would tell the story of that evening because of what she did for him because he was special. She hadn't known it. From the look on her face while he said all this, she hadn't a clue what he was on about. But he took it that she'd been getting him ready for burial. What a thing to say! The poor woman was in floods of tears by now, first thinking she was doing the right thing, then that she'd made a huge mistake, and now hearing Yeshua talk about being buried. But he was so gentle with her that in a few minutes it was all smoothed over. People started eating dinner again. And I looked over a bit later and Yeshua was talking to Mariam and she was smiling and nodding like nothing strange had happened at all. But the whole house still reeked of perfume. Well, people talked late over the food and drink that night. I think Yeshua was staying with Lazarus and his sisters again. I reckon I saw him step outside with them, him and his followers. But I heard afterwards that one of them, the grumbler maybe, had left early and no one knew where he'd gone. He didn't show up again until later the next day, and then he looked sly and smug. Maybe he was thinking he'd get his own back somehow for that public put down. After that, things happened very quickly. A couple of days later, like I said, was Passover. But by then, word was going round that Yeshua was under arrest. We didn't see him come back to Bethany that night, and his friends weren't around the next morning either. Then came news that there were some criminals being crucified, another barbaric Roman custom. And Yeshua of Nazareth was one of them. Mariam was in a right state for a few days, and Martha and Lazarus as well. Lazarus had to keep his head down, because the word on the street was that they were after him as well. They, of all people, being the priests. It seems they'd had enough of this young rabbi with his radical ideas and his huge following, and they'd decided to be rid of him once and for all. Worse than that, people said there was a turncoat in his group and that's how they tracked him down. One of his own gang had shopped him. I mean, who could do that and to such a good guy? But if I had to say what I thought, and I know you didn't ask me, but never mind. If I had to say, I reckon the guy who grumbled took umbrage and went to the priests that night. I don't suppose I'll ever find out whether I'm right or not, but if he got blood money from them, I bet it was less than that perfume would have cost. So there it is. The dinner party I'll never forget. The night Mariam of Bethany poured her perfume over Yeshua of Nazareth. And I'm glad I was there. At least, I think I am. That evening haunts me, even 10 years on. I close my eyes and I can be back in Simon's house. Even the tiniest whiff of spikenard gets me. Almost any perfume will do it. Two memories really stand out from that night. The first is that woman, Mariam. I'm still stunned at what she did. She had that precious bottle of perfume, worth so much, and in one gesture, she blew the lot. What a gift to give. I mean, there are ways to show you love someone, but that one takes some beating. It was a real once-in-a-lifetime thing, wasn't it? And what must it mean to her? That he was happy with it, that he thought it was important. And I think, could I ever love someone that much like she did? That's real devotion. They're still here, Mariam and her family. Lazarus seems stronger than ever, but Martha's almost housebound now. Mariam still floats around in a dream, but they all have a real joy about them, a real peace. Their house is usually full, mostly followers of Yeshua, who celebrate what he did and say he's alive again. That's hard to believe, but after what happened with Lazarus, well, maybe it's true. And the other thing that stands out from that night, obvious really, it's that young rabbi, Yeshua of Nazareth. A man so full of love he'd forgive just about anything. A teacher so clear he told it just like it was. He could be the humblest man around and yet then accept Mariam's, well, I nearly said worship. Because in a way, that's what it was. But I remember his words as well, as if it was yesterday. She did what she could. They say he'd said that about a widow's offering in the temple too. And perfume to prepare for my burial. He knew, didn't he? He could tell what was brewing up. He knew his end was near. I can't get my head round that either. How could he sit enjoying dinner with his friends, knowing that before the week was out, he'd be dying in agony on a Roman gibbet? What kind of man was he?
See now, the cross looms large. The sense of crisis grows. Yet none of his disciples grasps what Jesus truly knows, that he will gladly walk the path the Father chose. But hostile leaders mean to use the power they wield. Who knows the depths of jealous thought by darkened hearts concealed? They think that by their subtle schemes his fate is sealed. Yet now a woman shows devotion to her Lord, a jar of costly, fragrant spice. What less can love afford? She breaks the jar, and with that scent her love is poured. Then what will that man do whose cunning plans are laid, whose disillusioned bitterness wants Jesus sold, betrayed, and price is named to set a trap? The deal is made. And I, where shall I stand to watch this tale unfold? Will my devotion bloom and blaze, or shrivel and grow cold? Lord, search my heart. Will I be true? Will my faith hold?